Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Friday, January the 15th. We're right in the middle of the month of January. This is the last weekend of the Trump presidency. In a couple of days, Mr. Biden will be president of the United States. We'll have a few thoughts about that and maybe talk a little bit about this incident in the Capitol that it seems like we're learning a lot more every day about that. Joining us tonight is our friend George Rodriguez from South Texas, who's going to give us a weather report. Apparently, it's a little chilly down in South Texas, George.
Yeah, it's been very, very chilly down here. I mean, for us, the evenings, the night lows have gotten down as low as the middle 20s. And the daytime highs, although it did hit 55 the other day, they've still been in the 50s, which is unusual for. Well, I mean, it is winter, but it's kind of unusual for us to go through this extended of a period. The thing that's really been getting us is that we've had some dry, very very dry wind coming in since last weekend, and it's brought a lot of cedar, and people are suffering with their hay fever. Oh, we did have snow and ice. We had some sleet on Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's how cold it's been.
Yeah, it's been here. It's been around 30 degrees early in the morning, and then it goes up to like today. I think it went up to 56. But yeah, it's been. We've had some chilly mornings here in Texas recently. I mean, I guess did somebody say it was winter, George? I think somebody did, right? So. It's interesting because, you know, every day, you know, when we look at the weather here, I'm sure it's the same down there. They always have, you know, well, on this day and such a date, you know, we had the record high of so much and the record low of so much. And, you know, the other day they had like the record low for this week was like, I guess in 1981, they had like 2 degrees or something. And so, you know, that must have been pretty bad. 2 degrees. In Texas, I mean, that's pretty bad. I mean, that's pretty close to zero. That's when it starts freezing for sure. I mean, that's when you really start feeling, especially if you have a little bit of wind like we did today, George.
Yeah, it's exactly right. You know, it has been, you know, unseasonably wet in the spring. We've had a very, very dry spell since Thanksgiving. Now all of a sudden we're having some very cold weather, and it's amazing. I mean, it's been kind of unusual for us. But again, hey, it is winter, so you know.
That's right. Well, George, let me break a story for you tonight. Sources close to the information. Tell me that it's going to be 32 tomorrow morning. So my sources that I have, you know, very close to the information or familiar with the situation, they're telling me that it's going to be 32 tomorrow. Since everything in the news media today is sources familiar with the situation, it seems like they never quote anybody anymore. there's not a single story that I can read here lately that says, you know, this guy said this. Everything is, you know, clouded on this. Well, people familiar with the situation, or, you know, somebody close to the information, somebody familiar with the conversation. Anyway. We got a lot to get into tonight. We're going to talk about this sort of cancel culture, but it's a little bit – it's a variation of the cancel culture that we've been talking about. But I wanted to just pass this on. It's fantastic information. It was 54 years ago today, George, 54 years, if you can believe that, that the Packers beat the Kansas City Chiefs in Super Bowl number one. It wasn't even called Super Bowl number one back then. I think they started calling it Super Bowl the fourth or the fifth one when the Cowboys either lost to the Dolphins or no, beat the Dolphins, or when they lost to the Colts. One of those was actually a Super Bowl, but the first few ones were simply called the AFL-NFL championship game or something like that. Well, the first one was today. Barstar was the MVP, and the Packers, they pretty much dominated Kansas City in that game, as I remember watching it with my dad and with my brother. And the, you know, they won the first two. The Packers won the first two, and Bart Starr was the MVP in both of them, George.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember it very, very well because, it was really exciting to see the two leagues merging. And I remember that the whole discussion prior and after was that the Little Brother League, the AFL, was just not ready to compete on the same level, on the same field with the NFL. But then Joe Namath comes along 3 years later and wins, and then there was a string of victories by AFL teams, whether it was the Dolphins, whether it was the Pittsburgh Steelers, whether it was the Kansas City Chiefs. There was a long string of domination by the former AFL. And
that's right.
You know, and then it continued. Even now, it continues with the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to beat them from the NFC. I mean, I think that they're going to. As much as I would like to think that the Cowboys would do it, it's not going to happen.
No, not this year. But you're right. I mean, Kansas City. Of course, Kansas City is one of the original AFL teams.
Right, exactly.
That's one of the very.
And we've had the New England Patriots forever.
That's right. They've been winning a lot too. I mean, that's been quite a story. Well, one story that is not very pleasant is what's happening with some companies who are, basically pretty much coming out saying we're not going to do business with Donald Trump. We're not going to do, you know, we're not going to hire people who have worked in his administration. And, this is, I think, a really outrageous thing to do, George, because, I didn't know, and there's a very interesting case of the major league pitcher Curt Schilling, who was a very good pitcher with the Red Sox and the D-backs and played in several World Series, who now is, he says that his policy, his insurance policy was canceled because of apparently something he said or something he did related to President Trump. And first of all, I didn't know that political activities were a reason to cancel an insurance policy. It just doesn't seem to me like something that they can do on that basis. I guess, you can get canceled for whatever reason they want. It's a private company. I understand that. But normally with insurance policies, you have a contract. Coverage for a certain amount of time, and as long as you pay the premium and you stick to the standards of the policy, the policy will be enforced. But I don't want to get into the name of the company and all of that. It's not worth it. But it really bothers me to hear that. Then you have other companies taking actions like that, and they think they're going after President Trump. But I feel offended as someone who voted for him that they're doing this to the president. It seems like they're trying to destroy him and his family by closing, basically fencing him in so that he cannot make a living or whatever after he leaves office. I think it's a horrible thing, George, extremely bad, and I believe sincerely that it's going to backlash big time because you remember recently when the Academies and the Tonys and the Grammys and all of these shows began with their attacks and every night. I mean, it seemed like every time they did a show, 90% of the show was either attacking Reagan or attacking Bush, and now recently Trump. And the ratings collapsed completely. Nobody watches that. The late night shows that were supposed to be about comedy became nothing but anti-Trump shows every single night. Their ratings have also collapsed. So I think these companies are really risk playing with fire, George, when they start mixing politics with their business. I mean, if you make a car, your business is to sell the car. If you have a service, your business is selling that service. But when you start playing politics, I think there's a real backlash. And one more thing I'll say, George, forgive me for being so long-winded, but one more thing I'll say, many of these companies have public shareholders. I mean, I have, you know, if you have a mutual fund, you sometimes don't know exactly where the money is because it's invested in the private sector or whatever. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see a rebellion of shareholders saying, hey, wait a minute, nobody contacted me to do that. So anyway, kind of a long-winded way of saying, George, that there's going to be a backlash, George.
Yeah, well, you know, to me, what is happening is nothing more than a new style of inquisition and witch hunt, for crying out loud. You know, speaking on the issue of the insurance company that did this canceling of his plan, you know, since when does that become a requirement to hold an insurance policy? When did you know, your political views become germane to having an insurance? It just shows the depth of this culture, this cancel culture, to what depth it's gotten. And more than anything else, it shows the cowardice of these companies. It is nothing but pure Saul Alinsky tactics, where they threaten the company with boycotts and with pickets and to embarrass them publicly, et cetera, and they back down. What they should be is embarrassed to cancel somebody's insurance because of their political views. That's what they should be embarrassed about. They shouldn't be embarrassed about these loudmouth, insecure, immature people. But you know, it has become all too common. Whether mm-hmm. it is Black Lives Matter threatening the NFL or the NBA, or whether it's this witch hunt now, where even Forbes magazine went out on Monday and told and did an opinion piece that said that companies should not hire former Trump officials. That's outrageous. That is absolutely outrageous. And then to hear the owner, the publisher, what's his name,
Forbes,
actually defend and say, well, that's one person's opinion. Well, you know, yeah, that's their opinion. Writing an article in your magazine, are you going to turn around and write one that says that it's okay to hire people?
Right.
And he never said that. No, he never did. He just defended the person's right to be outrageously cancel culture. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting.
It really is. It really is, because what these companies, they should have the courage to go the distance. So, for example, if you're going to say, we're not going to hire, let's say a company says, well, you know, we're not going to hire any of the, or let's say Forbes magazine. By the way, I think Steve Forbes, to be fair, I think Steve Forbes did say that he didn't believe in that, and that his company
would
not.
No, he did. He said he didn't believe in it. That's right.
Yeah.
But he did say that they would put out a counter opinion piece, and that's what needs to happen.
Right. No, you're right about that. You're right about that. You're correct about that. But I think what I meant to say is that I think he did say that his company was not going to engage in that kind of cancellation of people. But my point is one of just basic business common sense. If you have an insurance company, you have a service, or you know, and it's an intangible insurance, or it's a service, something you provide. And when you buy the policy, you know, political opinions are not part of your underwriting. You know, you don't sit there and, you know, let's say you buy a life insurance policy. Well, you fill out, you know, you do the medical or the financial to justify the amount of insurance you're buying or whatever. You know, they may do a background check on you or whatever. That's fine. I mean, they, you know, take a urine test to make sure you're not, you know, taking drugs or whatever. That's all very fine. That's all. I mean, I have no problem with that kind of underwriting. Or whether it's a property casualty policy, you know, to look at the risk associated with with making the decision. But once they approve you, then you enter into a contract, which is what the policy is, and the policy very clearly specifies the things that would provoke a cancellation. Usually, let's say in a property casualty type policy, like a home policy or whatever, usually it has to do with not paying your premium, okay,
right.
or lying about something on your application or whatever. I mean, something outrageous like that. But there's nothing that says, who did you vote for? What are your political views? You know, who do you write columns for or political? And that this company would go that far. I don't know. If I was a salesperson for that insurance company, I would be screaming because I just gave my competitors a big edge here. Because now, somebody from that company calls on me to sell a policy. I'm going to say, well, I got to tell you up front that I voted for Trump. Is that going to be okay? And
that's right.
And I'm sure the insurance salesperson is going to be pretty embarrassed, because I think most of them probably want nothing to do with this, George.
Yep, it has gotten ridiculous. It has gotten absolutely out of control. And the only thing I can compare it to is a 21st century witch hunt, a political witch hunt, McCarthyism. These people have learned nothing from history because they're ignorant and they don't know history. They know
That's nothing about it.
Right.
And they hate Trump so much that they just lose their common sense. I mean, a lot of this stuff is losing your common sense. You know, if I'm the owner or the CEO of an insurance company, getting back to the insurance company, and, somebody in the board of director comes up with a bright idea that, hey, we're going to go after Trump, I'm going to say, well, do you realize that 78 million people voted for him, and that many of them have our policies, and that many of them are potential customers to our policies? You know, this is the kind of rational, adult, mature thinking that doesn't seem to go into place when you read about these companies doing these things, George. So, I agree with you. I mean, you're exactly right. It's terrible censorship. But I also think that it's a sign of the immaturity that so much of this hatred of Trump seems to be based on. We're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about George, with George, about this incident in the Capitol and see what information he has about it. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, talking with our friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. I was going to ask you, George, if you could give us a quick update on some of your presentations. I think you're back on that with those activities. So any update on some of your presentations in South Texas?
Yeah, I spoke to the Rotary Club on Tuesday, and it was very, very interesting because we spoke specifically about this whole issue of the cancel culture. The Rotarians, of course, are all known for their international
sure.
efforts to provide relief and do good projects
mm-hmm.
across the country. Well, the vast majority of them are business people, and many of them are feeling the pinch. Not only because of COVID and the shutdown and the lack of business that's commerce that's going on, but some of them are starting to feel the pinch because many of them had bumper stickers that had Trump on their
right,
on their car,
right.
and
right.
They have actually had rebellions. Two of them were telling me that they've had rebellions of employees and, that they've been called out by customers and whatnot. This is outrageous. It is really, it's gotten crazy, and you're right. These are people are immature folks.
That's right. No, that's what they are.
Immature and insecure, because, I mean, anybody who, you know, you cannot, that you're so afraid of them that you can't, they can't even disagree with you. I mean, you know, there's something wrong with that.
I agree. And again, was I, you know, if a company is going to cancel the policy of one person, like Kurt Schilling, because he supported Trump or was active in Trump activities or said something, they need to be honest and say, we want everybody who voted for Trump to know that we're not going to renew your policy. You cannot have it both ways. You cannot do these selective cancellations. It's either one or the other. And that's why I think there's going to be a huge backlash against these companies. George, just a quick conversation here at the end, a couple of minutes we have left. A lot of information is coming out about this Capitol incident, about potentially that it could have been a premeditated incident. Let me tell you my reaction when I heard about this. I was actually driving when I heard about the attack, you know, against the Capitol. And my first reaction was, wow, that's terrible. And then my almost immediate reaction seconds later was, this just doesn't sound like a Trump rally, because Trump rallies are not violent. There's no record of violence at a Trump rally. They just, you know, whether you approve or disapprove of the president speaking that day or whatever he said, his rallies have never been violent. Now, since then, we've learned a few things about, you know, how unprepared the Capitol Police was. That's a shock. You worked in Washington, and you know, I'm sure from your own dealings with the Capitol, how difficult it is to get in there. And the idea that hundreds of people could walk into the Capitol, you know, without authorization, with the vice president in there, that to me is outrageous, a breakdown of security, George, as well. So I just wanted to get your thoughts. You used to work in Washington. You probably went to the Capitol a few times to do business with the administration you were working on. I'm sure you went through all kinds of rules to get into the Capitol, George.
Yeah, I mean, you know, historically there has always been a strong presence of Capitol Police, particularly during demonstrations, particularly rallies and that kind of stuff that take place. There has always been a strong presence of police officers, of Capitol Police, and backed up by the D.C. police as well. And it has just been very unusual to me. I mean, I'm trying to deal with it myself, as to try to understand how these folks talk themselves into getting into the Capitol. You know, it appears to be not only a breakdown in security, but I think that there might have been somebody that just, you know, flat let them in. The way that some of these characters were dressed should have been an indication. Their mannerisms should have been an indication. I've had a very, very difficult. I mean, you've got to go through detectors to get inside the Capitol, the Capitol building. It just has been very, very disturbing to me that they got in.
Right.
Once they got in, they created the problems they did.
Yeah. Well, I remember being in the Capitol as a tourist back in the mid-70s, just going in as a tourist. And, you know, there were lines, and, I mean, you went in orderly. I mean, there wasn't this thing rushing in. And this was before, you know, you remember the 1980s when they had all those, you know, barriers around Washington because of fears of a truck bomb or something. But it is incredible to me, just absolutely incredible to me, that the Capitol was so poorly protected. That is something that somebody has to explain that to me. How in the world?
Well, you know, let me throw this out, because this is
sure.
a fact, that the Capitol management is always under the direction of the House Speaker,
mm-hmm.
And the Senate leader.
Mm-hmm.
That's who guides and directs, you know, the management of the Capitol building. And you know, I've got to ask myself, you know, What happened there?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right. I have no idea what happened, but the idea that people could walk in and sit on the speaker's chair and walk into the speaker's office, I understand, and even threaten the vice president. I mean, that whole thing is so bizarre that, you know, whoever did it, there has to be a very serious review of security, because I just cannot understand how people can walk in and you know, I don't know. I always sort of figured out, or at least expected, that there would be some enough security outside to at least stop the mob. But
yeah,
it didn't work out that way, and I think we're kind of lucky, honestly. I mean,
it wasn't worse. I mean, there were fatalities, you know.
That's
there
right.
were fatalities, and it
but
just
imagine
is,
if one of those people had a machine gun, and let's say a real terrorist, and they go in there, you know, I don't know, some Al Qaeda operation or ISIS operation, they go in there with machine guns and with bombs. I mean, you could have killed the vice president. You could have killed 100 members of Congress. You could have had the kind of terrorist attack that would rival 9/11, George.
Yep. You know, all sorts of tragic scenarios could have happened. And luckily that, you know, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it was tragic and it was terrible, but it wasn't that bad. This situation that we've got now, that it's turned into a witch hunt for anything and everyone, that bothers me as well. But you know that the folks that were involved were all Antifa or BLM. That's not true. Sad to say that many, if not most, of the folks that went rampaging in there were folks who were trying to provoke some type of incident. I spoke at in Austin on Saturday, last Saturday, at a rally for the state legislature. And as soon as the rally was over, there was a little group that showed up that was trying to provoke a new Lexington, as they put it. Mm-hmm. And these folks that are creating, you know, these problems are creating more PR problems for the conservative movement than they think or than mm-hmm. they know. And that is a real tragedy.
There's no question that what happened in the Capitol didn't help President Trump. I mean, it hurt President Trump tremendously because, unfortunately, even though he told them to march patriotically and peacefully, well, I guess some of them didn't, and there was tremendous damage. But I agree with you. We need to, as conservatives, we need to really. I mean, the left has the same problem. Okay, they have their radicals too. I mean, so it's not just on our side.
Unfortunately, the news, the liberal news, is loudest against us. So, you know, that's been the sad thing. I mean, they never called them out to the extent that they're doing with us on the when they were burning Portland and Milwaukee and everything
right.
else. I mean, you know, it's a real tragedy that we're looking at. I mean, I'm not happy at all.
No, you shouldn't be. You know, it's a very sad situation. Well, George, I want to thank you so much for your time, and thank you very much for joining us tonight on short notice and giving us your input, as you always do. And make sure you light that fireplace tonight. I think you're going to need it.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It's going to be a little rough there tomorrow.
It's going to be chilly.
Now, of course, our friends listening up in Nebraska or Milwaukee or Detroit or Toronto, or they're probably laughing at us because, you know, their temperature goes up to 30, and that's the best they see, whereas our temperature drops to 30. So they're probably laughing at us for being a couple of winter sissies who, you know, cannot stand some cold weather. But, George, thank you so much, and thank you for your time, and we will talk again. Thank you for your time.
You got
so
it,
much.
Buddy. Thank you very much. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Our good friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas, talking a little bit about this cancel culture, which is now taking on a very ugly face, because now we're talking about companies targeting President Trump, or worse than that, the people who work for him. And I just think it's a very bad idea. I mean, it's just a horrible idea. And I don't think it's going to work, frankly. As I said in my interview with George, I think it's going to be a terrible backlash against those companies who engage in this kind of behavior. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.